Good morning. My name is Elizabeth. I oversee our family ministries here at church, and it is good to be here with you today, to see all of you smiling faces. I mean, I might need some smiles today because I don't do this very often, but I'm pretty excited to be here and to share what God has shared with me this week. So, have you ever found yourself in a crisis of faith where you weren't sure what you believed, who you believed in, or if you even believed at all? Maybe like me, you grew up in a Christian home, and you know, for most of the first part of my life, I believed without much questioning. I just believed in Jesus, in who he was, and who I was told who he was. And it was in my early 20s when I began questioning and kind of wondering what I wanted to believe in and how I wanted to live. Or maybe you lived your life far from God for much of your life, and God suddenly brought about circumstances or people where he revealed himself to you in a really powerful way. I often get the privilege of sitting down with people and hearing their stories of faith, how God rescued them. It's almost like God took them and took them right out of a destructive path and brought them to Jesus. So maybe that's you. Maybe you got pulled out of a destructive life. Or maybe you've come today and you're in that crisis right now. You might be curious about God, about faith, and not sure. You might be doubting if the faith you've had in the past is real at all. And maybe the weight of your difficulties has dulled your faith, or maybe just the day-to-day life has kind of dimmed the way you once trusted in God. And I think wherever we are in our journey of faith, we shouldn't be surprised when we find ourselves in a bit of a crisis about our faith. I think it's normal. And in fact, I think it's why the book of Hebrews has been written to offer us some encouragement to keep on keeping on in our faith. And this summer, we've been looking at Hebrews chapter 11. This is famously known as the Hall of Faith. And it's a record of people from the Old Testament who, as it says in verse 1, were sure of what they hoped for and certain of what they did not see. They were people who pleased God with their faith. They believed God existed and rewarded those who earnestly sought him. And at some point in their life, they decided to put their faith in God, and their actions clearly spoke of that faith. Well, the writers of Hebrews records this chapter of heroes as a faith builder for the Hebrew people and a faith builder for us. And Hebrews 11 comes after repeated warnings to its audience. In Hebrews 10, the people are warned to not take their sin lightly, to hold tightly to God's promises, and persevere in community while following Jesus despite the difficult times they were having. And then he gives chapter 11 as a whole chapter of examples of people who lived lives of faith to challenge them, to challenge us to act on our belief and act on our faith in God. And right in the middle of this chapter, in Hebrews 10:31, we find mentioned of a woman named Rahab. And this is interesting to me that she was only one of two women mentioned in this chapter. And I find her story of faith both compelling and challenging. And I think you will too. And here is what Rahab is commended for in Hebrews 11:31. It says, "By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient." That's what it says about her. And we're going to have a look back at Rahab's story in the book of Joshua, chapter 2, to help us understand why she gets mentioned in this list of people of faith. And the first thing that might jump out to you, it's kind of the first thing that jumps out to me, is that Rahab was a prostitute. It's kind of the first thing I remember about her when I think about Rahab. And it's one of the things many people associate with her, the fact that she was a prostitute. And isn't it intriguing, right? That a prostitute is included in this hall of faith. Someone whose very livelihood was sinful. Yet, she's considered as an example of faith to follow. And it's not what she did in her past life that we're encouraged to emulate, but what she does in faith. It's how she moves forward from her lifestyle of sin. So not only was she a prostitute, but she was an Amorite. So what you should know about Amorites is they did not worship the God of Israel. They were considered enemies of God. They had their own gods, and they really didn't care about God at all. And that's where she comes from. But despite her kind of shady past and her association with these people who were enemies of God, she's mentioned in this hall of faith. She's included in as an example of faith. I think that's intriguing and interesting. So if you wanted to follow her story in Joshua chapter 2, you could turn there. I'm going to kind of tell you about what happens with Rahab. Well, she lived in the town of Jericho. Her story happens right after the Israelites had been in the desert for 40 years, right before the Israelites cross over the Jordan. God parts the Jordan River, and right before they destroy Jericho by marching it around it 7 times and blowing their trumpet. And she plays a key role in this battle where Jericho is destroyed. And as Israel follows the plan God had for them to enter the promised land. So this is what happened. Joshua, who's the leader of the Israelites of the time, sends out 2 spies. And he sends them out to spy out the land, to check out the city of Jericho. And while the spies are in Jericho, they end up staying with Rahab in her home. Maybe it felt like a safe place for them to stay. After all, there probably was men coming in and out of her home. So it would have felt maybe normal that they would be entering it. Furthermore, her home was on the city wall, so it was right on the edge of town. And it's unclear how long they stayed there. It just says that they stayed there. And it makes me wonder, I wonder about how long they were there and what they talked about. Did the spies talk about God with Rahab? Did they tell her about their experience crossing the Red Sea? Did they talk to her about God's provision to them of manna and quail and water while they were in the desert? Did they share their anticipation of what God was going to do and how he was going to bring victory to them in the promised land? Well, somehow the king of Jericho discovers that the spies are staying with Rahab, and he sends a message to bring the spies to him, to the king. But before the king's men arrive, Rahab instead hides them on her roof under some stalks of flax. Is she crazy? What is she thinking? She hides these men, and when the king's men comes to find them, she tells them that they had already left. And she sends them kind of on a wild goose chase away from these spies. And you know what? The king's men fall for it, okay? I don't know what that says about them, but we do know that God went before her. And the king's men pursue the spies towards the Jordan River and away from Rahab's home and away from Jericho. And it's interesting to read Rahab's words about why she hides them and about the beginning stages, I think, of her faith in God. You can look in Joshua 2, chapter 8, Joshua 2, verse 8 to 12. This is what it says. Before the spies lay down for the night, she went up on the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given this land to you and that a great fear of you has fallen on us so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts sank, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God, in heaven above and on the earth below. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father and mother, my brothers and sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. Well, why does Rahab hide the spies? Why does she do this courageous, maybe rather crazy thing? She hides them because she had heard about God's power. She'd heard about his power to dry up the Red Sea and how God had enabled the Israelites to destroy Sihon and Og. She trusted that only God could save her. And the spies promised her that it would be their lives for hers if needed. So, after this, they make a plan. They make a plan for her to hang a red cord out of her window. And they tell her to bring all of her family to her home. And when the Israelites come and they see the red cord, that she and her whole family would be saved, as long as that red cord was hanging out of her window. And you know what? That's exactly what happens. And if the spies return to Joshua and the Israelites, they explain the fear of those in Jericho, and God then parts the Jordan River and gives them instructions for marching around Jericho, blowing their trumpets. And God brings down the wall, and Israel destroys Jericho, sparing Rahab and her family, only her and her family. Rahab believed the stories she'd heard about the God of Israel. She showed her faith by protecting the spies, God's people. She placed her own life and the life of her family by trusting in God and following with faith the instructions that were given to her. And you know what? God rewarded her. God rewarded her with her life. She was saved, a family, and little did she know, later on, a place in this hall of faith, and even she would become one of the kind of mothers way down the line of Jesus, the Messiah. We actually read in Matthew that she married a guy named Salmon, cool name, right? She married Salmon, who was an Israelite. They had a son named Boaz who married Ruth, who later on we know was a forefather of King David and eventually Jesus, the Messiah. Pretty amazing how her life changed. Pretty amazing. And when I was thinking about this fact, how her life was part of history like this, it made me wonder, what will God do with my faith? What could God do with your faith? How does the way I live my life in faith affect future generations? I have a friend who I've been talking with over the last couple years, and she has felt like in the last couple years that everything was against her. Okay, her family was falling apart. People in her family had stopped following Jesus and everything seemed to be going wrong in her life. And at one point, she didn't actually do this, but I think this is what she meant. I feel like she stomped her foot. She put her foot down. That's not helping with this, is it? She stomped her foot, put her foot down, and she said, "Stop. This is not going to continue. I'm going to stand in the gap, and I am going to have faith in this family, and my family is going to change from here on out. I am not going to let this continue in my family." And so I have seen her do this. I've seen her kind of stand up and say, "I am going to trust in God. No, it doesn't matter that anybody else in my family is not trusting in God. I am going to move forward in faith." And you know what? I believe that God is going to change the direction of her family through her standing up for God and trusting in Him moving forward. Well, maybe you are the only one in your family to have faith in God. And I wonder how God will use you to change the course of history for your family. Or perhaps, I guess the opposite could be true. Will your lack of faith change the course of your family? You know, Rahab was faced with a big crisis. And despite the sins of her past, her fears of the future, she placed her trust in God, the God who could part the Red Sea. She trusted in God to fulfill His promises. And after this, she became a part of the Israelites. She became part of their family, believing in God and anticipating the coming of the Messiah. I wonder what is in your past or mine, even right now, that keeps you from placing your faith in God. Is it your sin that's holding you back? Maybe it's a relationship that you are in that's not honoring to God, and you know that. Maybe you're struggling with self-control. Could be self-control when it comes to drugs or alcohol, or pornography, or lust, or your finances. Perhaps it's just a lifestyle that doesn't include God. Instead, your life is focused on sports, or leisure, or friends. I don't know about you, I find it easy to live my life just for fun, just for the fun and the good times I could have, rather than living my life for God. And so sometimes, don't you think, we can become so wrapped up in our own stuff that we forget or we lose sight of what it means to live our lives with faith and the reward that comes with that. Sometimes for me, it's just the day-to-day living, the day-to-day busyness of life that kind of lulls me into living without faith in my life. Well, over and over and over again, we see in the Bible and in those around us who are living their lives in faith that it is either our own pride, our own desires, or fear of not being accepted that keeps us from coming to God or keeps us from returning to God. It's never God. It's never God. God always has His arms wide open to people who place their faith in God. So is it your sin holding you back from placing your faith in God? Are you afraid to come to God because you're afraid He won't accept you? Well, this is not a message that God gives. That's a message you might tell yourself, or that Satan would tell you, but that's not from God. We can look at Jesus' life, and this is what Jesus said to an adulterous woman. He didn't condemn her. He didn't condemn her, but He extended grace and forgiveness to her. And when she came to Him, what did He say to her? He said, "Go and sin no more." He said to her to leave her life of sin, and He welcomed her into His life. Well, soon after he said this to this woman, we know that Jesus took the punishment for her sins, that he died on the cross, that he rose again and conquered death, conquered that very sin that she was in. And just as Rahab left her sin, placed her trust in God, she was rewarded in salvation from her past and saved from death and destruction. You and I can experience that same freedom when we place our trust in God. This week I was driving and I was listening to the radio. And I'm kind of embarrassed. I was listening to this Miley Cyrus song. And I didn't know it was Miley Cyrus, but anyways, I'm listening to this kind of lame song. And when I went back to look at the word, but as I was listening to the song, I got this picture in my head of the ocean, because she's talking about the ocean. I don't know, it's about Malibu or something like that. So weird how God sometimes talks to us, right? So, yeah, I know. So anyways, so I'm listening to this song. I'm trying to figure out what it's about. And she's talking about the ocean. And I was thinking about a time I heard somebody say when they first saw the ocean and kind of how this whole big world opened up to her. And then it made me think about, you know, when you're hiking, if you hike, and you get up to it, you're hiking through the trees. You're in one of those hikes where you're all covered in trees, and it's like you step out of the trees, and suddenly the whole world is open to you, right? You see the view, the beauty, something you didn't see before, but it took that kind of first step out into that. Or I was thinking about like when you first fall in love. Okay, so if you've experienced that, when you first fall in love with someone and you first trust that that's going to be more than just you, right? You trust that the other person is going to return that, right? Some of you are nodding your head. You know what I'm talking about, okay? So that first time you fall in love. So I was thinking about how that first time you have faith is kind of like that, right? It's kind of that first step. It's like taking that tiny little bit of faith that you have, that Jesus died and rose again, that he conquered death, and placing your trust in him. And after you take that little step of faith, it's like a whole new world opens up to you. And what is that whole new world? It's forgiveness. It's that experiencing the forgiveness of God. It's experiencing the joy and the hope that you have something to live for because you know what God has done for you. So if you've never taken that first little step, maybe you feel like you don't have enough faith. All it takes is that one little step of placing your trust in Jesus. And it is. It's like a whole new world opens up to you. So sometimes it is sin that's holding us back. It keeps us from placing our faith in God. But maybe, and these are tied together, it could be fear that's holding you back. You're afraid that God won't protect you, that he won't watch over you. Maybe you're afraid that God couldn't possibly provide for you or help you with whatever you're going through. Maybe you're afraid you just won't belong in this group of people who are following God. Or you just don't fully understand everything. Sometimes I talk to people and they think they need to know everything about God. You don't. You just need to know what Jesus has done for you. Or maybe it's a fear of the future. This is one I often have trouble with is I'm afraid what God's going to ask me to do. And so I hold back from placing my trust in him because I'm like, if I really trust him, what is he going to ask of me? Anybody relate to that at all? Yeah. I remember I mentioned this crisis of faith that I kind of went through when I was in my early 20s, and I just finished my degree at college. I had taken a Bachelor of Religious Education, so it was like a Bible degree. And when I came out of that, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with my life. I'm like, God, why did I spend the last four of my years of my life studying the Bible? I had no idea what to do with my life. And you know what? All my friends around me were getting married, and I was nowhere near that. I felt left out, and I felt really unsure of what God had wanted me to do for my life. And it's like I forgot why God brought me there in the first place. And I think it was fear that made me retreat. And I went back, and I lived in my parents' house. I'd been away for 4 years. I went back and lived with my parents. And basically for that year, I didn't do much. I worked as a waitress, and I kind of just played around with not really living my life for God. Well, thankfully, and you know what? It sucked. It's probably like one of the worst years I ever had was that year I decided that I wasn't going to live my life for God. And thankfully, God brought a woman into my life who prayed for me and kind of coached me through that time. And eventually, I started little by little leaving my fear behind, leaving my sin behind, and again placing my faith in God again. Well, you know, Rahab certainly did not let fear hold her back, did she? But why? How did she have that courage to step out in faith? How did she do that? Well, she could do that because she had heard who God was, that he had the power to save her. The amount of faith was not important. It was not important how much faith she had, but it was who her faith was in, and it was in how she demonstrated her faith, how she acted it out. And it's interesting to me that she is mentioned again in another book of the Bible, in the book of James. And it's in the part in James chapter 2, where when he is talking about faith and action, and how faith and action work together, how her actions showed her faith. And let's think about how her actions showed her faith. Why would James use her as an example of this? Well, she hid the spies, despite what that could mean for her safety. She redirected the king's men. She put out a scarlet cord. Seems a little bit crazy. But this was not some pie-in-the-sky type faith, or that nice fuzzy feeling, that good fuzzy warm feeling that sometimes people talk about faith as, right? It wasn't that kind of faith that, oh, let's all have faith. And it kind of makes you feel warm and fuzzy to say that, right? But her actions showed her faith. I was talking through my message today with Brent this week, and he had read this quote, and he gave this to me. It's from Robert Coleman from a book called Discipleship. And this is how this man defined faith. He said, faith is a commitment to live by what we trust our lives to. Let's just read it again. I think it's really quite interesting. Faith is a commitment to live by what we trust our lives to. When we have faith in God, we trust our lives to Jesus, and that translates into action in our lives, like we see in Rahab. So, what about you? Where is your trust? What is keeping you from moving forward in your faith? Not just staying still, not just getting through the day, but actually moving forward. Is it your sin holding you back? Is it your fear keeping you from trusting in Jesus? Are you doubting that he will be faithful? And you know what? I think the book of Hebrews has a lot to say to us about that. I think the writer of Hebrews would say to you and I to fix your eyes on Jesus. He is the author and perfecter of your faith, and he endured the cross for your sake. I think he would say, don't let your sin hold you back. Don't let fears keep you from trusting. You can take that small amount of faith you have and place it in a really big God. Why? Because he loves you and he's shown his ability to overcome anything when Jesus rose from the dead. He would say to draw near to God, draw near to him with full assurance that because your faith in Jesus cleanses you from all your sin. He would tell you and I to don't stop meeting together. Don't stop meeting together, but encourage one another and to spur each other on in our faith. He would say to hold unswervingly to your hope that he's given you because he is faithful. He is faithful. Look at his track record with people such as Rahab, or look at the track record of God with your friends or your family around you. I think the writer of Hebrews would say to persevere through your trials. Continue in confidence and faithfulness to God, and it will be rewarded. You know, Rahab hoped and trusted God to be faithful to his promises to Israel. In the same way, we can trust in Jesus to be faithful to his promises. So as a church, as we ourselves kind of individually leave our sin and fear behind, I think God also wants us together to do this, to be an example to our friends, to our family, our community. And when I think of our vision to turn outward, to live God's purpose so our community could experience God, I think that looks like our church putting our faith in action, right? It looks like you as individuals putting your faith into action. It looks like our community groups, our small groups, putting our faith in action. It looks like us together stepping out in faith and putting our faith in action. And I think we can become kind of like that hall, become a church in that hall of faith one day, right? As a community who trusted in God, who did not let sin hold us back, did not let fear hold us back, but trusted in God to work in our church, to work in our community, and had our attitudes and our actions be in such a way that our community would see God in us. So Rahab, she definitely put her faith into action. She definitely trusted God with her life, and he rewarded her. And I know the same is for you and me, that we, when we put our faith in God, when we trust in Jesus, that he died, that he rose again, that he's coming back one day, and that he continues to work and live in our lives, that we will see amazing reward. Let's just take a minute and pray. God, I thank you that you are faithful, that you have shown your faithfulness to many, many generations, God. We can look at back at somebody at Rahab and see your strength, your power, your faithfulness to save and to provide, God. And we just want to, as a church, as individuals, place our trust in you. We want to live our lives with faith, not afraid of what is to come, God. And so I pray as we sing these songs, God, that you would speak to us, that you would point out those areas in our life where we are letting sin or letting fear hold us back, and that we would take that little bit of faith, that we would take that little bit of faith and trust in a great big God. God, we are thankful for you and thankful to be here together. In Jesus' name, amen.